Good afternoon, everyone. For the record, this is the Judiciary and Public Safety Conference Committee. Today's date is May 6, 2019, and we're reviewing the Senate File 802, the Senate Omnibus Judiciary and Public Safety Bill. Before we begin, you may have noticed that Representative Mariani and I went around and tried to shake everyone's hand that we didn't know for sure, and we just did that to kill time. First, because we were trying to figure out the fancy recording system we have here, and Senator Lang was late. So we just wanted to make sure that he got in the room. And I did want to make a few opening comments, especially about the Senate bill. As you know, our two bills are somewhat different, to say the least. And today's agenda, before we begin, let's just go around the room and introduce ourselves. Many of the Senate staff and members don't know the House members and staff. So why don't we begin with Ken here. Go around the room.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. Ken Backus, I'm the counsel for the Judiciary Committee.
Chris Turner, the Senate Fiscal Analyst for the Judiciary Committee.
Angela Cook, Committee Administrator.
Linnea Michelson, Senate Republican Research.
Mark Johnson, Senate District 1.
Andrew Lang, Senate District 17.
Senator Bruce Anderson, Senate District 29.
Ron Latz, District 46.
Jackie Clinton, Senate DFL Research.
John Walls, House Fiscal Staff.
Ben Johnson, House Research.
Jeff Diebel, House Research.
Dave Pinto, District 64B, State Representative.
Kelly Moeller, District 42A.
Next there was Senator State House District 30A.
John Lesh, District 66B.
Jamal Lundy, Public Safety and Criminal Justice Reform Committee, Committee Administrator.
John, I'll pick up with you.
John Hultquist, House GOP Research.
Callie Lehman, House GOP Research.
Rachel Ghanani, Committee Administrator, House Judiciary Finance and Civil Law Committee.
Robert Heider, House DFL Research.
Carlos Mariani, State Representative 65B, Chair of the House Public Safety Criminal Justice Reform Committee. And Mr. Chair, when it's appropriate, I'd like to make a few just opening comments as well, but I'll follow your lead.
You want to do that now?
I certainly can.
Sure.
Yeah. Right ahead. Thank you. Well, first of all, members, this is my first goal at chairing this division. There's been some slight changes to it this year, most notably the name change that adds criminal justice reform to the committee name. The accounts remain, however, the same. And in many ways, we inherited some very good work, frankly, that a number of you participated in, including you, Senator, in a bipartisan manner last year. And you'll see some of that reflected in the bill here today. I just want to very quickly talk about a few things. One is that we clearly have two different bills. That's why we're conferring. And what I'm counting on, Mr. Chair and members, is that what we do have in common is that we care very deeply about these accounts, about public safety, about corrections of the courts in our state. I have no doubt in my mind that that is a 100% unanimous sentiment in this room. Our bill does some pretty aggressive things in terms of funding and reforming in public safety courts and the corrections. I've talked about our bill as a muscular bill. We look forward to sharing that with our Senate counterparts in the days to come. I understand that the Senate has also striven to put together a bill that works within the direction of their leadership, just as we have on our side. And I also want to acknowledge that the obvious, which is we meet here in this room. We've been meeting here all year long, so we're a little bit comfortable here. But quite frankly, this is not a House committee members. Neither is it a Senate committee. This is the place where both our august bodies come together to negotiate and to agree on important work for the state of Minnesota. And so I bring that spirit, Mr. Chair, and so do my members as well. And that means we're going to strive to understand Senate protocols, parameters, et cetera. We hope that that's a reciprocal understanding. And we're mindful that we're not either a House or a Senate committee, but a group from both of those bodies that will be establishing and reinforcing the norms that have operated here for a number of years. Mr. Chair, you and I have a history. You used to be officed right behind me over in the state office building on the third floor, right, where I prefer to be because it's the bipartisan floor, and I still have fond memories of you hanging out. You and me hanging out long after the session is done, you'd walk over to my office and we would just chat. You and I also did some, I think, really good work that was underappreciated a decade ago with the Real ID. We kept our state out of a policy area for close to 10 years that in many ways still raises some concerns around personal liberties and data. I had some additional motivations related to immigrant communities, but the point is that we found a place where we can, where we overlapped our interests and did that, I think, with total honesty and a heck of a lot of perseverance and good hard work. And so I look forward to that same kind of spirit here with you and with your colleagues. And I'm sure I speak for my members as well in that regard. So look forward to it.
Representative Mariani and I worked together prior to the time I moved over to the Senate. And I hate to say it, but that was 1995. But nevertheless, Representative, we did good work. And I think that precludes what we can get done this year as well. But having said that, what I would like to do is kind of give you all a review of how the Senate approached this bill and the budget that we were given. Today's day, or our agenda today, will be to review the Senate version of the bill. Tomorrow, it'll be the House's turn to review their side, and then we can start a more meaningful discussion as we zigzag back and forth between two versions. We're not going to be accepting any public testimony today, but we will be presenting our bill. And I just wanted to have some opening remarks before we get too deep into it. You know, the founders of our state believed that public safety was such a high importance to the creation of our state that they made it Article 1, Section 1 of our state constitution. If there's any justification for the creation of government, it's outlined in that first paragraph of our state constitution. Constitution says, government is instituted for the security, benefit, and the protection of its people. And I think it's important to keep that in mind when we're in this type of discipline, this type of subject matter. Public safety should be and is the core function of government. And it goes in a lot of different ways. A lot of different trails can be added and interpreted from that one statement. I think the most obvious one is law enforcement to keep the peace, investigate crimes, protect our citizens. And we value the important public service that's done in our state on our behalf. Second one would be courts, to hear our cases. Every person deserves their day in court, whether it's civil or a criminal matter. As you get into the courts, you also get into some of the other areas that are of obvious concern to me this year. That would be guardians ad litem, to advocate for the best interest of our children. Public defenders, to provide constitutional representation when needed for indigent persons, and a robust criminal justice system for victims so that they get the best possible outcomes when they are abused or attacked by others. And a corrections system. A corrections system not only to punish but to rehabilitate in this state for those who perpetrate crimes against innocent victims in our society. And also to supervise offenders once they're released from incarceration. Our base budget in the Senate funds these core functions. Now that is up to debate, but nevertheless, I don't believe that the criminal justice system will fall apart if the Senate version is ultimately passed. As I mentioned before, I've been in the legislature for a long time and have either been a chair or a minority lead in this committee for the entire time I've been in office. And I want everyone to know I'm not an attorney either. And yet I find that when I discuss these issues with attorneys, I appreciate the discussion we have. And as I've said before, when I've dealt with Senator Latz, as we've worked back and forth together, I become better by debating with Senator Latz. He's never said that about me. But
let me take the opportunity right now, Mr. Chairman. It's reciprocal.
All right. We often approach things in a little different manner, but I think it's good for discussion. And you don't have to go too far to determine there are significant differences in our two bills between the Republican Senate and the House DFL. And not only are there vast political philosophies, but there's also just plain institutional distinctions that we approach differently. The Senate bill, pretty obvious, it's a whopping 30 pages. And the House is somewhat larger by about tenfold. And nevertheless, I approach this as both bodies coming to try and resolve not only issues, direction, but also do the very best they can with the target dollar amount that they've been given, which is considerably different. And I'm not sure why that is. I'm not sure why there's always those distinctive differences between House and Senate and how they approach things. But nevertheless, the Senate, despite its small size, has been working very hard this session. With three meetings per week, we spend a longer time on average critically examining and amending each bill, often voting bills out of committee. We do not have an opportunity because we have one committee for the House's three committees. And so we do not have an opportunity to listen to every single bill, and we won't. We'll establish our priorities as best we can, and then you have all of the other members lobbying to get their bills forward. And sometimes it's just a dollar amount reference. We can't go any further than what our budget provides us for. But nevertheless, we have to be a little more intentional with the time use of our caucus and in our committee. There are, on the side of this bill before us, this is strictly a budget bill. There are policy decisions that are included, but they're only included when they affect the budget that we have been given. We do have standalone bills that are separate, and they are going forward in the legislature as standalone bills. And once we get Senate positions on them, they too can be in play, although I would prefer seeing those pass separately. And I think it's important to remember our purpose, and that's to pass a responsible budget. That's what we focused on. We didn't include standalone bills in ours, as I had mentioned. And I really don't want to get, we tried not to get bogged down by policy debate because budget is so vitally important these times. We frequently argue about whether new spending is appropriate and, if so, on what it should be spent on. However, let's not forget that we're spending well over $2 billion on the base budget. With a base budget of $2.3 billion, the core functions of government that are currently being funded in this bill do not completely vanish. Our public safety and corrections functions of government continue on. And when we assembled our budget omnibus bill, we included only policy that has direct links to the money. In light of a divided legislature, I'm not always sure if we should have high expectations, to tell you the truth. But sometimes, as I've looked at divided government, sometimes our best work is done by divided government. I'm hoping that's the outcome this year. We shied away from divisive issues that we could have pursued, and we did that in part so as not to get bogged down in a conference committee, and partly out of the realization that divided government significantly limits what one side can hope to impose on the other. If we receive a higher joint target, my intention would be to put the money toward core constitutional functions of governing, not new policies and task forces, particularly if the new policies cover what the task forces could theoretically cover anyway. And I do look at the vast size difference of the Senate and House bills and want to remind us, and it's a question that I have, if everything's a priority, what's really important? And I think that's an important question to ask, even of ourselves. With that, I'll move this over to our fiscal analyst, Chris Turner, to explain the budget pages. And we can go further, and then we'll be followed by John Waltz with the House to walk through the spreadsheet. And then that'll be followed by Ken Backus with Senate Counsel. And then I would suggest we hold questions until the analysts and our researchers are done. And then we'll open it up. Chris?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And members, should have a worksheet in front of you. It's not in the book with a spreadsheet. I brought it with me today. It's titled Senate File 802, Judiciary and Public Safety Budget Senate Position. I'll be going over that. It starts out with the big numbers for some perspective here. The Judiciary and Public Safety base budget is $2,360,000,000. With an identical tail in 22 and 23. The governor's increase over the base budget in 20 and 21 is $226.3 million, a 9.6% increase over the current biennium. The House increase over base is $232.5 million, a 9.9% increase. And then you see, as Senator Limmer pointed out, the Senate increase is $25.3 million, a 1.1% increase over the current biennium. Now I'll head on to the budget itself. First, Senate budget items that are governor recommended agency increases. The first one is agency operating increases. They're sprinkled throughout the spreadsheet. One line per agency. And they include such things as step increases, pension, FICA, health insurance increases. Excuse me. The total governor's rec is $80 million for that. The House is at the Senate, is at the governor's rec, and the Senate funds that health insurance only at $19.6 million. So the Senate's approximately one quarter of the governor in the House position. The next line is DOC correctional officers and lieutenants, new hires. The Senate funds this at $7.5 million, tails of $22.5. The Senate position gets 65 new officers by the end of the biennium. Excuse me. For comparison, the House gets 73 and the governor gets 104 new officers. With the 22-23 tails, the governor and the Senate concur at about 126 total officers and the House at 116. Then we move on to DOC prison security systems tech upgrades. The Senate position is $2 million in 20 and 21. The governor's at $6.1 million. The governor, the House concurs with the governor, so the Senate is approximately one-third of the governor in the House. Then we have three small agencies, Board of Judicial Standards, Uniform Laws Commission, and the Sentencing Guidelines Commission, for which the governor, the House, and the Senate all concur. We're at 95,000 in 2021 and 82,000 for 22-23. Then we move on to the Senate budget items, which are legislative initiatives. The first is Senate File 2034, Supplemental Security Grants, funded through the Department of Public Safety, Homeland Security, and Emergency Management. The Senate position is $300,000 for these grants. They're one time. The House companion is House File 1850, funded at $300,000 each year for a total of $600,000. And then the House throws in another $150,000 in fiscal year 22 and nothing in fiscal year 23. The next legislative initiative is Senate File 843. It's the Rapidan Township Disaster Grant, funded through the Department of Public Safety, Homeland Security. It's a $340,000 one-time grant. It has no House companion. Next initiative is Senate File 1113. It's Veterans Domestic Abuse Prevention Grants. Once again, it's funded through the Department of Public Safety, Office of Justice Programs. Its companion is House File 530. It's funded at $200,000 each year for a total of $400,000. Then finally, under legislative initiatives, we have House and Senate initiatives with Department of Corrections bed costs. These are various sex offender provisions, including the marital rape exemption, which has already been passed and signed by the governor. The appropriation for these provisions is $98,000 in fiscal year 21, with $770,000 in 22-23 tails. The House and the Senate are identical on money, but there are minor differences in the policy languages, language in the bill. Moving on to page 2. Post-war general fund transfer. The peace officer training account has an ongoing deficiency in it, which the governor solves by transferring general fund money to the peace officer training account. The transfer is $1.1 million in 2021 and approximately $1.7 million in 2022-23. The governor keeps the post board special revenue funded by increasing the criminal and traffic surcharge to the surcharge allocation to the peace officers training account from 39% to 62%. The Senate concurs with the governor's recommendation. The House, on the other hand, makes the post board a general fund agency and funds its activities wholly through the general fund. Then it turns around and allocates 99% of the criminal and traffic surcharge to the general fund. I'd like to point out the cost of the general fund either way is identical. It's just the technical means of funding the post board. Then we have two Senate base cuts. First, the Department of Human Rights base cut, $273,000 a year, $546,000 for the biennium in 21, identical tails in 22 and 23. And then the police training reimbursement base cut through the post board. That's $6 million, $3 million each in 20 and 21. Those are the training grants that were passed by the 2017 legislature. That brings us to the Senate position, net general fund cost, 20 and 21 of $25,340,000 and 22-23 of $24,454,000. But there are two other provisions I want to talk about before I turn it over to John Walls. The first is the Senate has a Senate-only DACA transfer. DACA is Disaster Assistance Contingency Account. It's a $20 million transfer from the general fund to the DACA account if the closing balance in the general fund at the end of the current biennium exceeds the projected closing balance. The House and the governor directly appropriate $20 million to DACA in this bill. The Senate waits and sees if there's a surplus at the end of the biennium and then appropriates the first $20 million from that surplus to DACA. There is a precedent for this. The previous two bienniums in 2015 and 2017, the legislature funded the DACA account in this manner. And then the final provision I'd like to talk about is the fiscal year 2019 post-board deficiency. It's listed at $500,000. That's what it was at the beginning of the session. It may have come down since, once again, that's connected to the revenue coming in through the criminal and traffic surcharge, which goes up and down. It may be a little less right now. As it is, the House and the governor funded in this bill. The Senate bill is still in finance, but the Senate does recognize that 2019 post-board deficiency. And that, Mr. Chairman, is the Senate position.
Thank you, Mr. Turner. Mr. Waltz.
Mr. Chair, I believe in everyone's packets you have a version of the spreadsheet. Should look something like this. Should be in everyone's booklets. And I will just be going over the Senate, the House column, which is the shaded portion towards the center of the page. I will state that to a great extent, the House budget mirrors the governor's proposed budget with a few exceptions and some additions. To all of the governor's initiative requests, the House is higher on two or three of them and lower on one, and I will point those out. There, I will also point out the additions, but rather than just reciting hundreds of numbers, I'll try to talk about the provisions themselves with some numbers where appropriate. So, Mr. Chair, starting on the top of the first page for the Supreme Court, as I mentioned, the House includes the governor's proposals for employee salary, judge salary, and $5 million for cybersecurity. On line 9, it also includes $50,000 for a neutral evaluation study. On line 13 for civil legal services, this is one section where the House is slightly higher by $115,000 for the biennium in increasing services at civil legal services. And so for the total Supreme Court, the governor had $120,306,000. The House is at $120,435,000. Going down to the Court of Appeals, the House includes the governor's requests for employee salary, judge salary increases, and employee salary increases. Mr. Chair, then moving down to the district courts, again, the House includes the employee and judge salary increases. We include the gun extreme risk prevention orders. However, we had some, I believe, slightly amended language that cut the cost on line 37 from $162,000 per year to $81,000 per year. I believe it was the difference was one less FTE to the district courts. We include the governor's provisions for mandated psychological services, two new judge units, and treatment court sustainability. And on line 41, we have some clerical positions related to the inclusion of House File 982, Uniform Collateral Consequences. Mr. Chair, moving down to the Guardian Ad Litem Board, we include the governor's request for an operating adjustment, board development and training, technology upgrades, and compliance with mandates. I believe we're identical with the governor for the Guardian Ad Litem Board. Mr. Chair, moving us to the top of page 2 in tax court, we are identical with the governor and include the e-filing and remote helpline request. On line 62, the Uniform Laws Commission, we also are identical with the governor and the Senate providing the operating increase for the Uniform Laws Commission. Moving down to the Board of Judicial Standards, we are identical with the governor for including the operating adjustment and online complaint website money. Moving down to the Board of Public Defense, we include the governor's requested items for salary increases, health insurance, Hennepin County cost share, new staff, 50 attorneys and 58 support staff, public defense corporations increase, and we on the House side include provision for House File 1375, distracted driving, and this was the public defender's request for additional attorneys to defend in these types of cases. And on line 84, an additional 2% one-time salary increase to the public defenders. Mr. Chair, on line 89, the Department of Human Rights, I believe the House includes all of the governor's requests and is identical to the governor's amended request. We include the operating adjustment, the civil engagement, the regional offices, the ban the box for housing, and the on-base software updates. Under sentencing guidelines, on line 104, we include the operating adjustment, and on line 105, House File 997 directs the Sentencing Guidelines Commission to come up with early release target provisions. Mr. Chair, moving us to the top of page 3, the Department of Public Safety. The House funds the governor's request for the Minnesota School Safety Center, MIN-IT enhancements, the disaster contingency account increases, but also includes House File 1850, $300,000 per year for supplemental security grants. On line 120, House File 1273, emergency management readiness grants for $600,000. And on line 121, emergency response training reimbursements, $250,000 the first year. Also, Mr. Chair, on line 123, the House also includes $675,000 each year for 2 years only. This is for emergency response teams, and the funding from that provision comes from the fire safety account. Mr. Chair, moving down to line 130 in the BCA, the House includes the automated fingerprint system lease provision, the predatory crime agents, the cybersecurity compliance, the vulnerable adult investigations, the IT enhancements, the gun permit background checks, and Mr. Chair also adds House File 2709, a community policing database, and that is $50,000 the first year only. Mr. Chair, moving down to the fire marshal, the House is identical with the governor, just including $380,000 for IT enhancements, and the Board of Firefighter Training is the same under the House, Senate, and governor. Mr. Chair, moving to the top of page 4, gambling and alcohol enforcement, the House provides funding for additional agents to gambling and alcohol enforcement. I believe this would fund two agents, and that is for House File 1909. It's a direct wine shipper enforcement. And, Mr. Chair, there is also a fee and there is revenue that supports these positions. Moving down to the Office of Justice Programs, the House funds the governor's request for a task force on indigenous women and the IT enhancements. Also includes a on line 175, House File 418, Criminal Sexual Conduct Working Group. On line 176, House File 665, Youth Intervention, an additional $1 million for this biennium. The following line, House File 1604, the Children's Law Center receives $300,000 for the biennium. House File 717, $100,000 for a cannabis task force. House File 464, Domestic Abuse Transformation, is $1.6 million for the biennium. House File 530, the domestic Veterans Domestic Abuse Prevention, $400,000 for the biennium. On line 181, House File 2709, Community Policing Database Grant of $50,000 in the second year and ongoing. And on line 182, it's another provision in the same bill for a community policing database grant, and those are grants, I believe, to local communities for $200,000. On line 183, House File 2785, Sexual Trafficking Investigations Coordinator, $100,000 each year ongoing. And on line 184, Safe and Secure Firearm Storage, $200,000 in grants for the biennium. Mr. Chair, on line 185, the House also sunsets the Pathways to Policing initiative, and that saves $400,000 per year. Moving down to Emergency Communications Network, the House provides the governor's request for IT enhancements and also includes $200,000 for Emergency Medical Services Regulatory Board and $50,000 for 911 dispatcher CPR training. The House also includes a few provisions from House files that are funding other portions of public safety that fall outside of the jurisdiction of this committee. That is, there's a House File 1589, Ignition Interlock, and there is $750,000 to Driver and Vehicle Services to fund this provision. In traffic safety, the House has funded a $100,000 DWI study. And on line 208, there is a criminal forfeiture reform task force, $125,000 the first year. Mr. Chair, that moves us up to the top of page 5. The post board, the critical difference, as Mr. Turner mentioned, was that the House shifts funding from the special revenue fund to the general fund. In addition, it also includes the $155,000 per year asked for by the post board for rulemaking. It expands the membership by one member. I believe it's two members, from a provision in House File 334 and the funding for those per diems. There's extending the police training reimbursement by one additional year for $6 million in fiscal 2020. On line 232, House File 2460, the Law Enforcement Excellence Task Force is $106,000. And that brings us to the Private Detectives Board on line 238. We fund the governor's request for an additional oversight position at $85,000 per year. Mr. Chair, on line 245, beginning the Department of Corrections, this is a, sort of a full area here, but the House is mimicking the governor's budget with the exception of line 250. The House has not provided the same level of funding as the governor did for the correctional officers. The goal of the House bill is to get to 110 additional guards by fiscal 2022. And I believe the governor is at 120, so there's a difference of 10 agents by the year 2022. But we also fund the operating adjustment, the correctional lieutenants, the non-security support staff, the cooks and coordinators, the recruitment and retention, the restrictive housing behavioral health staff, security infrastructure, systems modernization, ombudsman for corrections, offender health care contract, 24/7 nursing at two facilities, electronic health records, chronic disease management, and juvenile correctional management system. To that, the House also includes the voluntary relationship defense eliminated and the bed impact there, the bed impact from increasing penalties on distracted driving, criminal sexual conduct in of persons of authority bed impact, a savings from reducing marijuana criminal thresholds. On line 268, the House has bed impact from child pornography increased penalties. On 269, bed impact of criminal sexual conduct on, perpetrated on persons in custody. On line 270, sex offense statute of limitations removed. On line 271, criminal sexual conduct definitions changed. On line 998, a savings from a bill traveling separately. It was House File 998. It's the Veterans Restorative Justice Act. On line 273, House File 2351, this is the bed impact of treating dimethyltryptamine the same as methamphetamine. And Mr. Chair, that brings us to the top of page 6. Community services, again, we fund the operating adjustment, the juvenile justice reform, the juvenile detention alternatives, pretrial assessment to the counties and the DOC, intensive supervised release, DOC and CCA counties, integrated case management, electronic monitoring, victim notification, children of incarcerated parents, transportation, culturally specific reintegration, parenting skills at four correctional facilities. Those are all governor's recommendations carried by the House. On line 297, House File 1028, alternatives to incarceration, an additional $480,000. On line 298, House File 474, mental health community supervision receives $800,000 in the House bill. And House File 689, probation support grants, $400,000 for the biennium. Mr. Chair, that brings us down to operation support on line 303. We include the operating adjustment, the critical technology needs, and the recruiting staff in the same amounts as the governor. Mr. Chair, that brings us down to line 315. The House-funded House File 982, the uniform collateral consequences, and this had a slight impact on the Department of Human Services, and so there is $853,000 in the biennium for some clerical positions at DHS. Also included is the Legislative Coordinating Commission. The House includes $14,000 for a commission on intelligence and technology. Mr. Chair, the House on line 324 also included House File, I believe it was 1115, cooperative divorce, and there is some startup cost to mediation services, but through the fee of that bill, after those startup costs are paid for, the provision is self-funding. Mr. Chair, there's some, going down to line 329, there's some transfers in here that probably don't mean much to most folks, but there on the House side, there's the ongoing community justice account transfer. It's an annual transfer that's in statute of $461,000. Then transfers to keep whole the displaced homemaker fund, $30,000. This was a provision related to cooperative divorce. The House includes House File 1061. This prohibits license suspension prohibition. There is $909,000 lost to a DVS fund, and so the House transfers general fund to keep that whole. And the same is on line 1589, ignition interlock. There is a requirement for DVS to fund some clerical provisions, and the DVS fund is inadequate to fund those, so the House makes a general fund transfer to fund those positions related to ignition interlock. Flipping over to the last page, page 7, there's some revenue fund changes, general fund revenue changes. On line 343 is just the accounting for eliminating the post board, and as Mr. Turner said, funding this from either the special revenue fund or the general fund is essentially the same impact either way, but because we fund it with general fund, our accounting is a little different. Mr. Chair, on line 344, House File 113, Ramsey County is treated slightly differently in how they receive fine revenue from the rest of the state. This would put them on a level playing field, but it reduces money to the general fund by $300,000 for the biennium. On line 345, the House has a $1 court data breach prevention fee. It blinks on for 2 years and then sunsets. It raises $405,000 a year. On line 346, the civil probate filing fee is increased by $50. This is permanent. Each dollar raises about $100,000, so that raises $5 million per year. On line 347, the criminal traffic surcharge is waived for the indigent. That is a loss of $2 million a year, or $2 million for the biennium to the general fund. And on line 348, it is showing the revenue on direct wine shippers, a new fee that is placed on them to fund the agents that will oversee those out-of-state direct wine shippers that were funded in the Department of Public Safety. Mr. Chair, that brings us to the bottom totals. And on line 373 are some semi-interesting things that happened to the special revenue fund, if you want me to go through those, but I feel like I've been talking forever, so that's up to you. Would you like me to go through the special revenue fund impacts, or?
I think we need to go through them. Mr. Walz, could you just refer to 383, line 383 on that list?
Line 383, there was an assessment that Governor Dayton had suggested a few years ago that had been accepted by the legislature and sunset, and that was an assessment that was going to be put on pipelines and rail shippers to fund, I believe it was, sort of special response teams and firefighter education to fund things like pipeline spills or perhaps oil train derailments. That rail assessment sunset, and Governor Walz has suggested that sunset be eliminated and that assessment continue, and the House has agreed with that provision.
Thank you. We'll now move on to Mr. Backus to explain the policy version for the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members, and I will only address the Senate file. And I'll be working off of page 2 of the summary, the Senate summary, if you want to look there, or page 15 of the Senate bill, Senate file 802, third engrossment. And just to give some information here, all of these provisions in the Senate's Article 2 were actually passed last year by the Senate and the House as part of the omnibus bill and vetoed by the governor. So as you can see, Article 2 is entitled Public Safety Policy Changes Related to Appropriations, and as the name applies, all of the provisions have some fiscal costs that are carried in the Senate bill. Section 1 amends the Predatory Offender Registration Law to require that offenders who commit a new crime in Section 8 that the Senate creates would have to register as a predatory offender. Section 2 expands the definition of position of authority in the criminal sexual conduct laws, and it would expand that to include, under current law, it's people who are currently in position of authorities. The Senate would expand that to include people who are recently in position of authorities. And the recent is essentially defined as being within 120 days immediately preceding the act. Section 3 is a conforming change relating to Senate Section 7. Sections 4 to 7 amend the first through fourth degree criminal sexual conduct crimes. The Senate does two things here. First, it uses that expanded definition of position of authority in Section 2 and applies it to first through fourth degree criminal sexual conduct. And then Sections 6 and 7 amend the third and fourth degree criminal sexual conduct laws to impose a new felony a crime for peace officers who engage in any type of sexual contact or penetration, essentially with a person who's in custody, in the peace officer's custody. Section 8 is the new crime I mentioned. It's a four-year, $5,000 fine felony for a person who violates the surreptitious intrusion or the peeping Tom crime if the offense involves the use of a recording device, the victim is a minor, the offender was more than 36 months older than the victim and knew or had reason to know of the minor's presence, and the offense was committed with sexual intent. And as mentioned, that person would have to register as a predatory offender under Section 1. Sections 9 to 15 amend the child pornography crimes. And what the Senate does here is it focuses on the more egregious violations of those crimes, and it adds a new enhanced felony statutory maximum sentence for those crimes, all of those crimes, if the crime involved the victim under the age of 13. And also adds the same enhanced statutory maximum if the offender was a repeat offender or was a registered predatory offender. And the Senate also extends the conditional release term for repeat child pornography offenders. Finally, the Senate, in Senate Section 16, requires the Guidelines Commission to comprehensively review and consider modifying how the guidelines and the grid address child pornography crimes. And Mr. Chair, that's the Senate. That's the Senate language.
All right. We'll open that up for discussion. Any questions? Yes, Representative Mariani.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. There's a lot to cover here, members. My first observation, of course, is that this state has made some really strong investments in a pretty smart way over the years, and you can see it as we look at the spreadsheet here. I hope that at the end we continue with that really good tradition. It's too much to cover for today. I'm looking forward to steady meeting throughout the course of the next week or two to be able to dig a little bit deeper here. And I think you and I talked about earlier about this hearing, and it's not really our intent to do, you know, super deep dive here today. And so I want to be able to honor that. I do want to raise a couple of points really quickly. And the first one is really more a question for either one or both of our fiscal analysts. There is a adjustment that's happening here with the Pulse Board funding. Both bodies come at this a little bit differently, including the governor. I believe the Senate actually lines up with the governor's approach on this thing. But here's my question. We do have a deficiency funding for the Pulse Board of $500,000. It's my understanding it's not the first time that we've taken that step in recent years. The adjustments that are being proposed here is in response to that. But one of the things that my question for our fiscal analyst is what is the expected, what is your understanding, either one or both, what's your understanding of what the future shortfalls, if any, will there be future shortfalls under the present design? Number one, will there be a projected shortfall under the design that both the governor and the Senate have adopted that's reflected here in the Senate proposal?
Mr. Walt? Or Mr. Turner?
Mr. Chair, in response to the question, I believe the governor's position and the Senate position of moving the dedication from 39% to 62% is projected to hold the Post Board throughout the next 4 years, which is as far as we project things in state budgeting. Okay. The problem would arise in the future without if we do not then increase the percentage again in the future, the problem will arise and there will be a shortfall unless we either increase the percentage, increase the fines on which they draw revenue from, or add additional revenue sources to that fund. Those are options if you don't go to the general fund, but the general fund would be a permanent solution.
Mr. Turner, did you have anything to add to that?
Mr. Chairman, members, I agree with Mr. Walls. I would like to point out, though, that there is momentum toward either waiving the criminal and traffic surcharge or reducing. We're going to see. There's political momentum towards reducing the amount that's brought in by that surcharge. And the faster any of those proposals take place, the sooner it's going to be, the Post Board funding will be imperiled again. But like Mr. Wall said, the governor's proposal holds under current law for 4 years.
Well, and Mr. Chair.
Representative Mariani.
Mr. Chair, thank you both gentlemen for that. I'm struck by the fact that we've had to do this before. And both proposals, I believe, are meant to be revenue neutral in terms of the impact. It's really about what approach do we want to be able to have going forward so that we're not, so that we're minimizing the possibility of having an important entity depend on a deficiency funding decision. It's a tough way to run a vital entity like that. It's also, Mr. Chair, a really good example of where policy and fiscal impacts absolutely across. All across this nation, as well as here in the state, there is in fact, a tremendous pressure to be able to ratchet back the impact of fines in traffic courts for our residents. And that definitely will then lead to all sorts of challenges to whatever entity gets funded out of the special revenue fund. But, Mr. Chair, I just want to highlight a couple of other things. I don't want to, as I said, go through the entire budget here. But, you know, the Department of Corrections, it's my understanding that the Senate proposal, while it does a healthcare expenditure step, that forward step is actually not carried through out into the present years. And so I just want to verify that. That may very well be a question for Senate fiscal staff.
Ms. Turner?
Mr. Chairman, members, that's true. None of our health care increases have tails. It's one-time appropriation. I think that the Senate was trying to show its priorities. If we'd have gone straight health care with tails, we wouldn't have been able to show any other priority, which we did by having tails in the Department of Corrections to show the House what we were thinking.
And Mr.
Representative Mariani.
Thank you. And Mr. Chair and members, I think this is an area where both bodies can help each other. Here, it's again, it's awfully really difficult for us to take a step forward where our public employees are depending on a vital part of their compensation and their quality of life if it only lasts for so long. And that gets us into a much bigger conversation. I believe it's a little bit above your pay grade and my pay grade as well. Mr. Chair, in terms of what's available for us, but we hope to be able to have a really strong conversation about that in the coming days, particularly as we call on the Corrections Commissioner to come and share his concerns in regards to that. And then one final question, Mr. Chair. There's a big difference in terms of how the House and the Senate approaches the police training dollars. This is actually less a question, just a quick observation. The House's approach is to maintain the current $6 million a year that was negotiated out a few years ago within this committee, and frankly extended out the existing sunset for yet another year. The House believes very strongly in making that kind of a strong investment in the professional quality skills of our law enforcement community in the state. I'm looking forward to having conversations in the next few days directly with them about what impact scaling that would have. And obviously the House also has some policy that is connected to that in regards to evaluating that kind of investment. Because it's a big investment that we've made, evaluating the impact of that investment. So, Mr. Chair, just a quick highlighting of a pretty big difference between the bodies in regards to investing in law enforcement. I look forward to having that conversation in the days to come.
All right. Any other discussion? Senator, Representative Lesh.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I wanted to bring up first the public defenders. I think you and I both agree that public defenders need to be adequately funded. They're currently at 68.5% right now of caseload, according to American Bar Association standards. And under the Senate proposal, the testimony was that they'd actually fall back to 63% staffed. And they testified in committee that if they were shortchanged or had a shortfall, that innocent people might go to prison. And I know, you know, we don't book those costs, nor can we book the savings if we increase public defender levels. But We will see the per diem numbers on a spreadsheet, either from Department of Corrections or, to say nothing of county workhouses or local jails. And so I'm wondering if you can give an idea about how we can reconcile that, if there is that shortfall and if there is that testimony that we're going to be in a real pickle if we don't fund them.
Representative Lesh, everything that's represented in our budget is based on our budget target. Hopefully we'll be seeing an adjustment to that target as we proceed, as we get closer to the end of session. I haven't seen anything yet. And as Mr. Turner said, with the limitations that we had, we tried to focus on two priorities as best we could. The first one was correction officer staffing, and the other was health care of our state employees. Once that was allocated in our budget sheet, we had limitations after that point. And so it's a work in progress, Representative Lesh.
Well, Mr. Chair, I appreciate your honesty in that. As we move forward and with the expectation that the budget, the target number will change, I just didn't want to, I wanted to highlight, besides the public defenders, also the guardians ad litem, we're at the risk of being out of compliance with federal law and losing federal funding on that too. So I wanted to point that out as we take a look. If the number does come up, I want us to make sure that we look at that closely. And then finally, Mr. Chair, I know you and I are in agreement also on the court's funding as well. It's the really core function that we're doing here, making sure that the third branch of government can do their job. So, you know, you can't give an answer right now because we don't know what the new number is going to be, but I did want to highlight that.
Representative Lesh, I'm glad you brought these issues up. I made these comments earlier in my introduction today of the core function of the courts. Guardian ad litems, I mentioned, public defenders, I mentioned, among others. And you and I do agree on court funding. I think for too long, and I've said it before, I think for too long we've treated a third branch of government as a government agency or a government department. And somehow, in the course of the conference committee, I hope we can establish an expectation for this third branch of government that hopefully will stand a test of time into the future, and that the legislature will not look at it as an agency or a supplement to our state budget. So we've got a little work to do, but I think we can work together on it.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Any other questions, concerns?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Mariani.
Mr. Chair, I do appreciate hearing your sharing. You've been very, public and straightforward about your hope, and as you continue to work with your leadership, as we continue to work with ours, that we're able to get to a place where the Senate can make the kind of investments that I believe you you personally wish for us to be able to make. And so I share your hopefulness for the targets. We know that under the current Senate plan, we'll hear more about this in the coming days, given the targets that the Senate was given, that the Department of Corrections is looking at some pretty drastic staffing impacts. We're not talking new staffing, but we're talking about existing staffing, somewhere north of 100 employees, up to 120 employees. One of the things we'll look forward to sharing with you is that there are a couple to several spots in the House proposal that actually raises revenues. And we hope that that's on the mix at the table so that we can help meet those, you know, those basic commitments and obligations that we've both expressed a commitment to. I have a quick question for you as we get into the conversation tomorrow on the side-by-side. Mr. Chair, you had shared, you indicated that there are bills that the Senate has moved, that you're both hopeful and anticipating there be some action on the Senate floor. I'm wondering if you can share with us, to the extent that you're aware, when that movement might be happening. Quite frankly, for us as House members, it's very difficult to negotiate when we're not sure what everything's on the table that ought to be negotiated for. And so if you can give us some indication, some kind of a roadmap, perhaps, of what you expect and when you might expect much more clarity with that, that'd be greatly appreciated.
Representative Mariani, I don't have that complete list with me right now. I can have that for tomorrow. But even later today, when the Senate reconvenes, we're taking up a mini omnibus bill on Department of Correction policy bills. These are bills that don't cost money, but they do move policy in different directions. There's about six provisions in that that will recognize different aspects of correction policy. And I have directed the staff that places individual bills on our agenda to move our areas of concern quickly to the floor. And I can bring you a list tomorrow of what direction we're working on. So you have a little bit better big picture of what the Senate is doing.
It would be greatly helpful, Mr. Chair, as we move through the process and get into a much more solid series of offers with one another in terms of constructing this bill.
Representative Mariani, it is still the Senate's position to move these bills separately. And so we'll just have to see how that proceeds.
Well, and Mr. Chair, and I do appreciate the Senate's desire. The challenge I think we're going to face is that unless there's a matching provision with the House, this place is really going to be pretty much the only place where those set of priorities are going to have an opportunity to be fully vetted. So look forward to working that out.
I believe, Representative Mariani, that some of these are resting in your Ways and Means Committee waiting to be passed, that standalone bill. So we'll just have to see which way the House really wants to go.
Sounds good.
All right. I don't think there's any other questions or concerns. Yes, Representative Mahler.
Thank
I just
you.
Met you a few minutes ago, and I already forgot your name. I'm
here,
sorry.
Let me do this. There we go. They know me across the table here.
It's a bad habit of a politician not to remember names.
That's all right. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And because we don't know each other, you may not know your members. I'm a prosecutor, so I'm new here, but I've been working on sexual assault issues for the good majority of my about 20-year career now. And I really appreciate the sexual assault provisions that you have in your bill. But there are a number of other things that that we heard in our committee, and we heard from a lot of survivors and a lot of advocacy groups here about some other concerns. And one of those things that came out of that was the task force for sexual assault to look at rewriting the criminal sexual conduct code, because over the years, I know a lot of things come here and get fixed, and then there are loopholes, and it's can be quite unwieldy, the criminal sexual conduct code as it is now. That was a priority for the Coalition Against Sexual Assault. And Mr. Chair, I listened intently when you talked at the beginning about every person deserving their day in court and a government for the protection of its people. And I really believe that the task force is getting to that. And not only that task force, but the Missing and Murdered Indigenous Women Task Force, which I know you have heard testimony on that as well. And I'm just kind of curious, because you said you didn't believe that any money should be given to task forces or working groups. And I just wanted to explore that a little bit.
Mm-hmm. In my years of being in the legislature, I've never really been convinced that task forces really bring us too far, other than to reinforce the original premise of a bill, but only a year or two later. And if that's really the direction of where we're going and we can't escape it, why have a task force? Now, there are historic issues that I believe are represented by the missing and indigenous murdered women in the task force that's been proposed. I'm actually a co-author of that bill, and I believe that it is time that we should have that. Matter of fact, the Senate took it upon itself this year to consider it, and it is not part of our bill simply because we had to take our limited targeted dollar amounts and focus it on the core function of governing. That's not to say that this is not a priority in our minds. You may remember that this provision was passed in the large omnibus bill of last year, only to be vetoed by the governor because that singular bill just made it too heavy for a governor to sign. That's not to say that that bill is any less of a priority by those who voted for it last year. And it still is one of my top priorities. I think everyone in the Senate on this conference committee would agree with that. So, but overall, when it comes to policy direction and not historic precedent such as that task force, I often believe that task forces really don't accomplish a whole lot. I prefer working groups of dedicated legislators to come in during interim and actually work on bills rather than having task forces that oftentimes, not all the time, but oftentimes are a collection of stakeholders protecting their own turf. And so I think in this case, the missing and indigenous murdered women are ones that we should consider. Any other concerns, questions? If not, we stand. Representative Mariani, I'm sorry.
Mr. Chair, and I apologize. I should have given you a heads up. So very quickly, we will convene tomorrow, and we're set for noon, I believe. And I do know that our body is trying to make it possible for conference committees to meet, so hopefully that's an agreement that both the Senate Majority Leader and the House Speaker have made. We will be, hopefully, knock on wood, walking through the side-by-side tomorrow, as well as talking about key elements of the Minnesota House bill. Mr. Chair, I'd like to focus tomorrow on corrections particularly, and we'll also hear some judiciary issues as well. Mr. Chair, my hope is that as I conduct this co-responsibility with you, that that I'm constantly making sure that members are fully aware when we're going to meet, what we're going to meet about. Hopefully, that the public is also properly notified, so that I'm not pulling last-minute things on either my members or your members or on the public as well. Our hope, Mr. Chair, as we move forward, and obviously this will become more real as we get into those targets that you and I are both anxiously waiting for, is that the House is able to consistently present good offers before the Senate for your consideration. And hopefully we can keep the pressure on to on both our leaders to be able to get to agreement so that we can get to agreement as soon as possible. So with that, Mr. Chair, I look forward to meeting with you tomorrow.
And Representative Mariani, I know that we're dedicated to the same process as well, keeping the public informed foremost, as well as giving each other as much notice as possible of what the subject matters will be in the upcoming days.
Yes.
And we can move forward and do ultimately good work for the people who put us here. Having said that, we stand adjourned.